Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Big Blue Insider is on. News Radio 630 WLAP and the iHeartRadio app. To interact with the show, call us at 859-280-2287. That's 859-280-CATS. Or you can tweet us at BigBlueInsider1. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider, hour number two of our program. Talked a lot of football in hour number one. Of course, when you have Tim Couch on the line with you, you're going to do just that. We'll talk some more football, but some basketball and other things as well with our next guest, who is a longtime friend of the show and has been covering sports in Kentucky for a long time as well. First with the Courier-Journal, now with WDRB over in Louisville, Rick Bozich on our celebrity hotline. How are you tonight, sir?
You didn't tell me I was following Tim Couch, man. I feel like, you know, I'm Wally Pipp.
Well, I tell you what, you know that you're not going to top him, so the pressure's off, right?
The pressure's always off with me. I'm not going
to
top anybody.
And now we'll talk more basketball with you, so you'll be, you won't have to try to match him stride for stride. But all right. I do want to talk first a little bit of football with you, because it's interesting, some of the preseason surveys and the polls that are used to try to fill the bottomless pit that is the internet rating and ranking, and the stock is rising on Louisville, U of L football. You cover both programs. In Kentucky, I think people are a little cautious based on, you know, who's the quarterback and new offense and all that. But what do you think of the fact that it looks like people are expecting anywhere from 6 to 8 wins from Louisville this year?
I think in part that is a result of the after Clemson, the rest of the ACC Atlantic Division is pretty muddled. Florida State's not back to what Florida State used to be and really hasn't been for several years. NC State probably is the second best team. And then you got Wake in there and Boston College, and Syracuse is down. So Louisville should be able to, if they can bounce back from last year, they could take advantage of it. And the second thing is they lost a lot of games last year because of turnovers. And if they can just cure that one problem alone, their record should improve. But I'm not quite as sold on Louisville as some other people are, because they lost three very, very good offensive players. And although Malik Cunningham is back at quarterback and he's experienced, replacing Javian Hawkins and Tutu Atwell and Des Fitzpatrick is not going to be easy.
You mentioned Tim Couch, and of course he was on in our first hour, but it hasn't been very often that Kentucky has had someone with his kind of skill, of course, but presence at quarterback, you know, and it's always, it seems like every spring, if you're a fan, if you're a media person, you go into spring thinking, who's going to come out of this with the starting job, you know?
At Kentucky, I mean, been, Mark Stoops has done a fabulous job at Kentucky. He's built the program up step by step. He's made them, you know, when anytime you go to a game now, you feel like they have a chance to win.
Yeah.
And that didn't used to be the case. But if there's one criticism you can make of what's happened, is it's been quarterback development. And for whatever the reasons are, whether it's not having somewhere that can help develop them there on the coaching staff, it's not recruiting the right guys, it's misevaluating who they brought in.
Yeah.
And we all know that quarterback is such an important position now. If they can ever figure that out and fix that, I think that's when they really can make the next step up and be right there, looking eye to eye with Florida and Georgia.
I think Drew Barker was supposed to be the answer, but of course he had series of injuries. But that's football; that happens, you know. And they were able to make up for it, and then they made up for it when Lynn Bowden was pressed into service. But it's not quite the same, is it?
No, it wasn't. He put on that spectacular performance, obviously, in the Belk Bowl. I was there that day. That's still one of the top 10 performances as a college football player that I've seen actually in person in this area. But no, it's not quite the same. Excuse me. And to his credit, they've won in a way that I didn't really think Kentucky would ever be able to win.
Yeah.
It's that they've built an offensive line that's able to block SEC teams effectively and run the ball, old school kind of football. And as everybody else has gone more the other direction to more of a passing spread offense, Kentucky's been a little bit behind the curve. And to Stoops' credit, he recognized that, made some tough decisions after the season, and has Liam Coleman in now. And I think people are very curious to see how that's going to work out.
Rick, I want to ask you about the rise of Devin Booker. He scored 42 points, the most ever by a Kentucky men's basketball player last night in the finals. Do you see shades of Kobe Bryant and Devin Booker?
I see that, yeah, in terms of the versatility of his game. And the only reason I hesitate to say that is I would be uncomfortable putting that kind of pressure on any player. And I know Stephen A. Smith has already done that, so it's already out there. But I've always been a huge Devin Booker fan. I thought he was a very creative offensive player when I saw him at UK. He wasn't as mature back then, but he's been the foundational piece of the Phoenix Suns, and they've come literally from the bottom of the NBA to being two wins away from winning a championship. And he's, you know, along with Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton are the primary reasons. And I love watching him play. He plays a positive brand of basketball. It's like you want to watch him play. He makes it fun to watch, and he looks like he's having fun while he's doing it.
Speaking of Stephen A., you're a big baseball fan. I know that, and your beloved White Sox. What was your reaction as a guy who's in a similar line of work as Stephen A.? You know, you write and you're a commentator, but he certainly stepped over a line, I thought. What was your reaction?
Yeah, it was unfortunate. I mean, he's paid, I think, is it $12 million? Is that what I've read?
Yeah.
And $12 million. To give those kinds of takes. That's why he is who he is. And when you get in the batter's box and hit that many, you know, hot takes in this day and age, you're going to, you know, swing in some bad pitches. And that's what he did. And I'm glad that he apologized in the aftermath of that. But it was unfortunate that initially he doubled down on it. And, you know, what I don't like about it is that Ohtani is such a great story.
Yep.
And he also plays the game with joy. And I mean, the White Sox opened the season against the Angels, and I watched him pitch one game and play the other game. So it's like he's fun to watch. So I didn't understand the reason he would go after Ohtani.
Rick, do you have a solution to solve the All-Star games, whether it be baseball, football, hockey? I mean, these sports just don't seem to get it right. It just all seems like a big exhibition. Is that the way it should be, or do you think there's a way to spruce it up a little more?
Well, I'd say baseball is the most entertaining of all the All-Star games. And I think somebody explained it to me this week, and I think they were right about it. One reason is that in baseball, you have to play defense. I mean, it's forced. You got to pitch the ball and you got to catch it. So I think they put more effort into the baseball game. But I don't really know what can be done to fix the NBA or the NFL ones, because I don't think the players are really into doing it. The baseball one was disappointing this year with some of the people that opted out. And it's tough for me to handle because, Dick, you probably remember, I mean, you think back to some of those All-Star games in the 60s and 70s.
Oh.
I mean, they were playing hardcore. And
yeah,
it wasn't just Pete Rose running over Ray Fosse.
That's
it was
right.
Like everybody that was playing the games. It meant a lot then. There was more mystique between the National League and the American League. It was much more competitive. Players weren't making as much money. And I think, you know, they took a lot more pride in it than they do now. But we're so far down the road now that I don't see a way to fix it.
Do you think maybe that's because players have moved so much? Because, you know, growing up, I don't know about you, I guess you were an American League kid. I was,
yeah,
as well, as a Yankees fan. Then I switched to the Cardinals, and I was a National League kid. But it was so weird to see a guy who had been playing in the American League suddenly he's in the National League. That sounds kind of silly, but I think there was something to that.
No, I absolutely agree. And you pigeonhole players as AL guys or NL guys. Not that many went back and forth, you know, from one league to the other. But now, you know, you've got interleague play, which I think interleague play has kind of run its course. I'd like to see baseball drop interleague play.
Same here.
I mean, the Cubs and White Sox games are interesting to me. I guess the Reds and Indians games are interesting, but like when the White Sox play the Pirates or they play the Padres or something, or, you know, Rangers, yes. I guess Pirates, I mean, it's meaningless.
Yeah, I agree.
Rick, were you surprised by the reaction of some major league professionals when Stick'Em and some of the sticky stuff started to get cracked down on with Tyler Glass now and Gerrit Cole? I mean, I think there's an argument to be made about having a grip on the baseball in a late July day, but I mean, it just seemed like it really meant something to them to have that sticky stuff on the ball.
Yeah, you know, I was actually watching the game. Glassnow was pitching against the White Sox that night when he got hurt and had to leave the game in like the fifth or sixth inning. So when he spoke the next day, I watched actually part of the press conference on the MLB app, and he was pretty upset and emotional about it because he's not going to have surgery at this point. What I think they needed to do was they needed to solve this in the off season, not in the middle of the season. And I think what they will eventually do is they'll settle on one or two different substances that are approved, and they'll let guys use that and they'll move forward. But I do agree that if you look at the spin rate since then, it's obvious like a whole lot of people were doing stuff with the ball, and offense has improved since then. So they're going in the right direction. They just should have done it in the offseason. Baseball has an incredible knack of doing more to hurt itself and bring itself bad publicity than any other sport. It's incredible.
You're right.
It started a long time ago when it was the first sport that had a strike, and the players and the owners have had a more adversarial relationship than in any other sport, and it's hurt the game.
Yep. No, there's absolutely no question about that. And I gave up on baseball back in that strike in the late 90s. I didn't care who was right. It's like, you all are rich. Figure this out. We want baseball. It was, man, don't get me started on that. Just a couple of minutes.
I got bad news for you, though. It's coming again. The agreement's up I think in the 1st of December, and most people are predicting it's going to get really ugly.
And a friend of mine yesterday said, I wonder if they're going to have the playoffs this year. I mean, it could get that kind of real. So just a couple minutes left with Rick Bozich. Of course, it's always time to talk about basketball recruiting, and it looks like, obviously, Kentucky is not going to get the big kid from Illinois, but I think they're going to be okay. And U of L has picked up some names, or is not withering on the vine in spite of some problems. What do you see upcoming this year based on what you've seen here in the summer?
Well, I said after last season that John Calipari would fix this, and he'd fix it quickly, and he has. I mean, he waited and several months and made his move on the coaching staff, and he was very aggressive in the transfer portal. And I think he's obviously got Kentucky heading back in the right direction. Kofi Coburn would have helped. I'm surprised he isn't going to Kentucky for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. He's not, because I've watched him play at Illinois the last 2 years, and other than Shaquille O'Neal, he's the most massive human being I've ever seen.
No kidding.
I'm not saying how good he is. I'm saying how big he is.
Right.
He's a monster. And he's been a good player. He was first team All Big Ten this year, and the Big Ten most people thought was the best conference in the country. He would have helped them. But they'll be fine. I mean, they got plenty of weapons moving forward, and Davion Mintz, it was a plus, him coming back. Sure. As for Louisville, Chris Mack also has had to reassess what they're doing. He got some criticism last season, not only for not making the NCAA tournament, but people thought their style of play was not entertaining, not boring, boring and not something that a lot of recruits would gravitate towards. Mm-hmm. And he brought in two new assistant coaches, and they have seven new players. And I think he'll have more work to do to figure out the pieces. But I like a couple of the kids. The kid from Miami, Matt Cross, was a really good shooter before he left their team. And you saw Noah Locke at Florida. He's a nice piece. And so if to me, the key to Louisville is going to be if they can ever get Samuel Williamson to play at the level he's capable of playing, that'll really help Louisville, because he's the only McDonald's All-American on the team, and he's been very inconsistent.
Well, these two teams get together, the guys on the bench are going to be different. Most of the lineups are going to be different. But it's going to be fun regardless. And Rick Bozich will be there to cover it, whatever happens. Thank you, sir. Hope you have a great summer, and I hope to see you in person sometime soon.
All right, I hope to see you in football season soon, and looking forward to being to come back down to Lexington. So
thanks
brother. For having me on.
Appreciate it. Have a good time. And we're back in just a few here on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Thanks again to Rick Bozich for joining us. I didn't realize. I knew there were players coming and going. I knew there had been changes over there on the U of L staff and on the roster, but I didn't realize it's almost paralleled, hasn't it, in terms of new faces on the roster, new faces on the coaching staff. This, again, is unprecedented with both teams going through this kind of stuff.
Yeah, they just got a JUCO guy today,
yeah.
Sidney Curry, and I think that makes seven new guys on
yeah,
their
that's
squad.
What he said, yeah, seven, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Man.
Just like Kentucky.
Well, and that's why, like I said, it's going to be really interesting when these teams hook up in, well, I'm not even sure what
yeah,
the
you could
is.
Argue Kentucky's bringing back their most experienced team ever in the John Calipari era.
But not experienced with Kentucky. That's
right.
That's the
yeah.
fun part. the Barbasol golf tournament going on over at Keene Trace, and it's Brian Stewart in the lead by one shot. He was 8-under today, and there are four or five players behind him. Just one stroke back. Josh Teeter, a lot of people thought would be the guy to watch, and he is one, being one of the local favorites. But, Mr. Rutledge, he had an eagle on the par 5, number 5, at Champions at Keene Trace. But he also had two double bogeys, one at 10, one at 18. So he shot a 69, and we'd all love to shoot a 69, but he said, there's a bad taste in my mouth. He said, dinner won't taste good tonight. So
yeah.
He is way back.
I can relate on ending your round with a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
But watch out. Barbasol 2022, Dick. You saw the putting thing I brought into the studio.
Yes,
today,
I did.
Right?
Yeah. I did, yeah.
You wait, watch out.
I wouldn't talk much about that on the air because you don't know who from management's listening. But let's put it to you this way. During slow times, Billy works on his putting here in the office. You may have already seen this, but Yankees, Red Sox postponed, another COVID scare, and they're wondering, is this a result of somebody being at the All-Star game and bringing it back? So, you know, you thought you were beyond this because more and more teams have a majority. I think they said 85% of the Yankees were vaccinated, but it's still dangerous, man.
Yeah, Rich Eisen sharing today that he was vaccinated and tested positive.
Is that right?
Yep.
I didn't hear that. Well, you know, it's just something. It's all new. It's new to everybody. I don't know if you saw this story, but there's a guy in Michigan bought a house a couple of years ago, and he found out one way or the other. They're he and his wife, second owners of the home, wife and three kids. They received a house inspection before they finalized their purchase. And the inspector said the cement stairs were kind of leaning into the house and needed to be demolished. So when they went to remove the stairs' cinder blocks, he found out there were old bowling balls under the house foundation. So far, I don't think they're done yet, he's removed 160 bowling balls. Who in the what?
Where do you get that many bowling balls?
Well, I don't think they were his.
Oh, he was just taking one back every time.
No.
He went to the six, the
no.
10 pin.
He bought the house, not knowing they were there. But evidently, there was a bowling product plant, Brunswick, famous name, and he said he called the manufacturer of the bowling balls. And he found out the old pieces of equipment likely came from a plant the company had in the area back in the 1950s.
Yeah, somebody was taking one home every night.
Evidently, I don't know. Or they just had some they wanted to get rid of and dumped them in a lot, covered them up, and then builders came in and built on top of all those bowling balls. Man. He smashed up the rest of the loose cement, found a grid work of balls stacked up in poured sand. Man,
Can you imagine? What a waste. You're not going to even use those balls.
Well, I guess whoever planted them there realized they were never going to use them anyway. Oh, by the way, the independent or the original owner died in 2016, so they couldn't ask him about it either. You might want to poke around your house, see if there's any sporting goods equipment.
You're listening to Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Billy Rutledge, 280-2287, 800-606-4263. Tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. In case you missed it earlier, we talked about the fact that three Kentucky Wildcats are going to be inducted into the Kentucky Sports Hall of Fame, formerly known as the Kentucky Athletic Hall of Fame, and they are Dwayne Casey, Rachel Commissars, and Keith Madison. And, of course, Dwayne with a long career as a head coach and an assistant coach in the NBA after winning a national championship with the Wildcats, and coached in Japan as well. I was actually over there at some point while he was coaching and grabbed my friends. This was in 1994. And I said, let's go watch Dwayne Casey's team play. So we went to the Yoyogi Gym. I think we might have had to take a train to whatever district that was in. And they were like, well, and it's an old building. Well, where do we get tickets? How do we get in? I said, hang on a second. And again, I saw a TV truck. Well, where there's a TV truck back then, and if it's outside, in an old building, there are cables that have to go in somehow. New buildings have what are called dishes or whatever you want to call them, where they can fly them up over the truck and you know, up way overhead. Old buildings, you had to run the cables in through a door, a side door. And in fact, at the 1978 National Championship game in St. Louis, Kentucky and Duke, that's how I walked into the arena. Even though I had a press credential, the door was propped open with TV cables from the NBC truck. I thought, I'll go in this way. I got a pass. So that's how we got in to go watch Dwayne's team play in Japan. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, it was back when, I don't know what the rules are now, but they were limited to two Americans. But Dwayne was coaching. Pretty good basketball. I wanted to talk some more about Romeo Crennel. Let's go to line one first, though. Jeff's on line one. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, Dick. How are you, bro?
What's going on?
I was just listening to your past guests and thinking about the quarterback problems we've had and the coordinator problems we've had. And I couldn't help. I have a scenario for you.
Okay.
You know, when Mark Stoops first became a head coach, I'm not going to say he was handpicked, and I'm not going to say he was force-fed Neil Brown. But at that point in time in Mark's career, he was trying to get his feet under him as a head coach. How could that have been different if he would have hired Neil Brown when he hired Eddie Grant? Because obviously Neil knows how to coach an offense. And could that have alleviated some of our coordinator quarterback problems? Because, you know, Neil didn't stay very long because he had an idea of what he wanted to do, and then Mark was getting his feet under him, and he didn't really know what he wanted to do, and then the Shannon Dawson thing happened, and then I think Neil really didn't get a fair shake of what he could have shown. And because he was a Kentucky boy, you know, that's why I said, you know, handpicked for Mark to take that, you know, a Kentucky boy with the air raid, bring the air raid sirens back and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So might have been different if he would have hired Neil later on in his career when he had his feet under him a little better. Does that make sense?
It does, but here's the one thing that's a really interesting question, because I think that when Mark Stoops took the job, he wanted to have a combination of a really strong defense, of course, with his background, but he wanted an offense that could set terms and tempo and that kind of thing. But the one thing, Jeff, we've learned, and this really surprised me, but I don't know why. As you know, I'm not very smart. I was really surprised that Mississippi State struggled so much last year. You know, starts off by beating LSU. Turned out they weren't very good anyway. But we watched Kentucky completely obliterate Mississippi State's offense, didn't we? Which shows us, that you can run the air raid or some semblance of it, but you got to have the right people. And Leach did not have the right people. When Hal Mumme got here, who did he inherit? He inherited Tim Couch, Anthony White, Craig Yeast, all these guys perfect for the air raid. And it worked wonderfully until Mumme gave up on the run game, which brings us back to Mark Stoops. I know for a fact that Stoops was so concerned about the offense, because remember, when they had success, bam, they would score quickly, and his defense is back on the field, and they had zero depth. His kids were sucking air by the middle of the third quarter. And you remember they lost that Southern Miss game when Shannon Dawson was here, or I guess it was the year before that, because he came back and beat them, because they ran out of gas. So Stoops needed to find a way to slow things down, so he went back to running the football. Maybe with the defense well established now, when he hired Eddie Grand, I think Jeffy had that in mind, because Grand and Henshaw ran one of the nation's top five offenses up in Cincinnati, but they didn't have the right people here, and it never got off the ground.
Yeah, and they had a kid named Travis Kelsey too, didn't they?
I believe they did.
They did. Makes a big difference. But yeah, you're right. In the first half of that Southern Miss game that we lost.
Oh my gosh!
I was jumping up in joy. So, I mean, I thought that's the greatest. I'm like, here we go, because we lit it up in the first half.
That's right.
And I thought, here we go, but then the wheels fell off.
That's correct. And do you remember the first half of the Louisville game when Lamar Jackson came off the bench?
Oh, yes, I do.
Similar. Absolutely. I mean, although the defense scored a couple times, but they were having a big time spraying the ball all over the field, and the next thing you know, Lamar's killing them.
Yeah, and that happened once before with another kid from Louisville came off the bench. Yeah. I don't even remember what his name was.
Bolin.
That escapes. Yeah, there you go.
That's right.
Yeah, that was two L's that should have been wins.
Yep. You got to have against the team that was throwing up the L's. You got to have the right plan and the right people, and I think that once they sort of stumbled onto, they knew Benny Snell was good. That's why they pulled him out of Ohio. But go back and look at his freshman year. You can go online to UKAthletics.com. Benny Snell didn't carry the football in his first two games. He made a couple tackles in special teams, but he was playing behind Boom and JoJo. But when he announced himself in that New Mexico State game, when Steven Johnson stepped in, that changed the course of UK football history.
Yeah, I don't have to go back and look. I was there.
There you go.
Did you see today where you can get a penalty for putting the horns down in the Big 12?
What?
So are we going to get a penalty? But yeah, if you put the horns down a Texas player, it is a penalty for taunting.
That's lame.
So are we going to get one and put the L's down?
Yeah.
If you do it to the crowd, it's to the officials, whatever you want to call it.
Discretion.
But if you do it to a Texas player, yeah.
Well, that I could see. If you do it in the face of a player, that I could see. But if it's a flat-out ban, no. But if you ought to be able to do it on the sidelines, do it with your fans, I could see that in the face of a player. But, yeah, I'll bet you that does spill onto that rivalry.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff.
It will. Thanks,
appreciate it. Good talking to you. That's an interesting take, you know, about the way the offense has evolved here at Kentucky. You know, and you're talking about Mark Stoops. He's a new head coach who had been planning for this day. And I'm sure when he was talking to Mitch Barnhart, it was, I'm going to build an SEC defense, and I'm going to build an offense that is current, that is relevant. I don't know what word he might have used, but let's face it, Nick Saban, God help me, Nick Saban has adjusted to today's college offenses. Remember when Nick Saban was trying to get rule changes to slow the game down?
Yeah, he's going up, run up the middle.
Yeah, you know. And really, I think people shouted him down. I was very proud of the college football community. It's like, stop your whining and coach the game. And he adjusted. Why? Well, he can go out and get the players he needs. He goes out and gets Mac Jones, a kid who was 100% committed to Kentucky, but I'm still going to visit Alabama. Bye, everybody. And it worked out. He had a storybook finish to his career. Now he's backing up Cam Newton, or Cam's backing him up in New England.
Yeah, I'm more worried about this L's down thing, Dick. I mean, how sensitive are we going to be every time we see an L's down or a horns down? I think it's going to be an issue.
That's the point. Is it every time we see it, or I walk up to you and go L's down in your face, that's a flag. I'm okay with that. I'm not big on taunting. I think that's Bush League.
I'm just not one for giving referees more judgment calls, to be honest with you.
Well, it's not like they're asking for it either. You know, they don't make up the rules.
Right.
They pull them into a room and say, okay, fellas, here's what you're calling this year. And I'll promise you, do you think big league umpires like strip-searching pitchers in the middle of the field at the end of the second inning? Rick Bozich was right. That had to be handled.
I think, though, that there's about 5% of all refs in all major sports that like it to be about themselves.
Oh, I fully agree.
When they make a call, TV Teddy.
That.
Closes his eyes. He knows he's going to make that call. And the block charge where he gets to, like, run into it, Dick. I'm standing for the radio audience that can't see. And he gets to charge with all his might.
He sells it. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
People, well, having been on that side of the argument, people don't like it, when, especially basketball officials, when they sell it. But I can tell you this, there's times you need to sell it.
If they made the call, like the hand signal for that call different, I think we'd see the amount of times it called go down.
So what would you change it to?
I don't know.
Because the official call.
Like the butterfly Napoleon Dynamite? Just a quick one of those.
You know what they're supposed to do, don't you? Do you know what
the
mechanics are for that call, right?
What?
Put your hand behind your head. That's the old charging call. And you put maybe your left hand behind and your right hand out. But now they've kind of left alone that hand behind the head thing, and they punch that air like they're George Foreman, you know.
It's like a runner taking their lead off a base, you know, the little gallop that you do.
Yeah, there's a little hop step.
They get in a little hop step, and they go, ugh!
You know, when you talked about being there to watch them, it's funny because, you know, I've said many times, my little brother is still umpiring baseball, and he's very good. He never has to throw anybody out. He said he's been at meetings and seminars and stuff. And in their downtime, guys tell stories about who they banged and why they threw them out and this and this. And my brother's looking around thinking, I don't have any stories like that. Well, you know what? If you're good, you don't have to. Because you can work your game, make the proper calls, and communicate with coaches and managers. And they trust you. They respect you. But when you talked about that, you know, the first game that came to mind, you weren't here yet, was the Music City Bowl when Benny Snell was ejected by an official.
Yeah, because he hurt his feelings. His hand away.
He put his hand down. He shoved his hand away.
Yeah, I remember that.
Hurt his feelings. Oh, man. And that was I wrote about it for the BigBlueInsider.com, the fact that I felt like this guy, and I asked the guy, and I often do this, before the coin flip, when I'm out there and the captains are walking out, if I don't know how to pronounce the name of the white hat, I will ask him. Sometimes Tom Leach in my ear will say, hey, ask this guy how to pronounce his name. And that particular referee, there was a typo somewhere between the program and the spotting chart, two different spellings, could have been two different pronunciations, and I can't remember what it was, but I asked the guy, how do you pronounce your name? And when he told me, with his tone of voice, like, don't bother me. I thought, well, okay, Mr. Man. And so it didn't surprise me when this guy turned out to be, you know, Mr. Sensitivity and threw Benny out.
Do you remember what his name was?
No, that's what I'm saying. I can't remember. I'll have to look that up.
I do remember you telling that story.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not fair. Not fair at all. But yeah, when he said that to me, like, well, you know, I'm like, oh, sorry, you know.
Well, not only that, but think about Lynn Bowden punching that player before the game started.
He was damn lucky.
That was the opposite of what happened to Benny.
Now there's the Lynn Bowden rule.
Exactly.
Officials are at an hour ahead of the game. Hello, Dick from Dayton. What's up?
What do you say, Dick Gabriel?
We are just slugging
it out. I got a good feeling about these Reds. I think Yeah, they are. You know, if the pitching holds up, and the the offense and defense, I think they can go to the playoffs. What do you think?
They're chipping away, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
They got to nail the bullpen down, though.
You got to nail the bullpen down. Hey, always a pleasure.
All right, good talking to you. He is perpetually positive about Cincinnati sports. No question about it.
So is it true that they didn't call the Cincinnati Reds the Reds during the Cold War?
Yeah.
So they called them Red Legs?
If you were a Red, man, you were a communist. And so they were like, well, what do we do about the team in Cincinnati? So the Red Legs was a reference to the socks they wore. High stirrup socks. And so to this day, you'll hear, and our man Jeff Drummond still calls them the Red Legs. And Jeff is a little bit younger than I am. But I always really enjoy it when I hear people call them the Red Legs. I just think that's, but some people who do have grown up hearing it from their dad or their grandfather or grandmother or whatever.
But it was slang. They didn't change the branding, right?
I think they did.
That's incredible,
though. Yeah. I'm pretty sure they did, and I'll Google it here during the break. But I would imagine they did. And I know I'd seen, and it might have just been an informal sort of presentation, but I'm pretty sure I saw some artwork or something that called them the Red Legs. Because if you didn't, yeah, that was a tough time, man.
No, yeah, I realized that there was probably a collective conscience to not say that. So there's an understanding of, we're going to do this for the greater good. I would just love to get my hand on some Red Legs gear, though. Because it's got to be that time period and because of that distinct reason.
That's a great point. Let's see here. I just was able to Google it. And in 1953, they officially changed the team name to Cincinnati Red Legs. And from 56 to 60, yes, they altered the club's logo. It's Mr. Red, bat over his shoulder, and on his chest was the Cincinnati C. They actually called them the Red Stockings.
What?
Officially. Yeah, because of their socks. But also they called them at times Mr. Red Leg. They call them the Red Legs. Wow.
That's pretty cool.
They did make it official. Yeah. So a good question for you. All right, we're back in just a few here on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats. 630 WLAP.
Welcome back. Fun tonight with Tim Couch, with Rick Bozich, helping Billy learn about the Cincinnati Red Legs, the Red Stockings and the Red Legs they went by. They did change. They published a yearbook that said Cincinnati Red Legs. A tumultuous time in our history. But that's interesting.
Got to get my hands on some 1956 Mr. Red Legs.
I'll bet if you took a day and went up to Cincinnati and poked around, ask Jeff Pecoro where you might find some of that. If you're really up on finding stuff like that.
Maybe Dick from Dayton.
Maybe so.
He's got some, too.
Maybe so. I mentioned Romeo Crennel, speaking of Western Kentucky. He coached there, was the D coordinator, or D line coach, really, under Jimmy Fikes, played there, Fort Knox High School, and was a four-year starter as a D lineman, and then played both ways his senior year. And believe it or not, Billy, a lineman named Team Most Valuable Player. Was not drafted, though. Never played in the NFL. But because he played both sides of the line, it really helped him in terms of learning the game of football. So here's a guy who was never drafted, never played, immediately went into coaching. When he graduated, became a GA at Western and then a full-timer, goes to Texas Tech and was an assistant on the defense under a coordinator named Bill Parcells.
Heard of him?
Yeah, pretty good. Then he goes on to coach at Ole Miss and Georgia Tech. And at Georgia Tech, he met a guy named Bill Curry. Then he was hired by the New York Football Giants by a guy named Bill Parcells. Won a couple of Super Bowls there. Left the Giants, went to the Patriots for 4 years, went to the Jets with Parcells for 3 years, spent a year with Cleveland as the D coordinator, back to New England under Belichick, his longtime friend, won 3 more Super Bowls. Before the 03 playoffs, he interviewed with 6 teams inside 36 hours. No offers. Passed up by the Giants, Bills, Cardinals, Bears, Falcons. Finally hired by Cleveland. I mean, you know how well they run their team. Went 24-40. Not so good. A couple years with the Chiefs as a head coach. Not so good. Now he is with the Texans in the front office. Now he's a Kentucky Hall of Famer.
And last year became the oldest person ever to coach in the NFL as a head coach at 73.
Romeo Crennel.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.